Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another episode of our Playlist Podcast. This is where we assemble to talk about the games that have been entertaining us lately. I'm Sig Stepmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle, also from Scanline Media.
And I'm Kyrie Page, rounding out the trio of Scanline Media.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, listen, it's been a quiet part. You know, we said it, like, at the time, like, we had sort of the big month where a bunch of games were released, and it's like, it seems like the rest of the year will be pretty quiet. And, yes,
so,
that was true.
So far, that is true. Yes, absolutely. Like, I was thinking about it earlier today, and I think about, like, okay, what games do I actually want to, like, talk about later in the year? I can think of DNF Duel and Splatoon 3. But those are, like, well, DNF Duel, that's, like, is that July or is that June?
I think that's June.
I think you're right. I think that's, like, June 28th, but that's, like, end of next month, you know? And
yep. Personally, I don't believe in slow times. Like,
you don't believe in the
concept. Do you believe? Do you not believe in gravity, Jen? Like, what are we doing?
I mean, like, sure, there may not be a bunch of AAA games that you're looking at into the future and being like, yeah, I'm gonna be interested in that. But I find that whenever there's these quote unquote slow periods within game releases, there's a bunch of indie or like double A or something releases that come up instead and get my attention. So it's one of those situations where I never feel like I'm missing a avalanche of games or whatever.
Fair enough. I find that there are times that there are no big games coming out and the little ones are not to my taste. That happens with some frequency for me.
So. Also, like, I cannot necessarily count on, like, the little games, you know? It's like, for my perspective, it's like, oh, the little game comes out. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize I was interested in this sort of thing until I learned about the concept in that exact moment, you know? That being said, I think there was recently, like, an indie world. Nintendo put out, like, an indie world, and it was like, Gumbrella looks all right. Like,
I mean, but that was...
But at the same time,
I don't know about you, but that was the most positive reaction I had of that looks all right. It was like nothing looked like good. Some things looked okay. Most of them didn't look great. And some of the stuff just doesn't show well in that context. I get it.
Sure.
But it did not excite me.
Meanwhile, for me, it's been a weird situation of just like, there's been a lot of fucking Square Enix games this year and I've ended up inadvertently falling into several of them over this period of time. Like, there was Stranger of Paradise. After that, I was like, I'm interested in playing some more stuff. And there's also this Triangle Strategy game, which also happens to be by Square Enix. And, like, a week ago, like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, was when I first heard about the Centennial Case, a Shijima story, which was an FMV game produced by Square Enix, of all people. Like, a year or two, maybe a little bit longer than that, after The Quiet Man. Which was a bit of a surprise. Just being like, okay, y'all want to try another... Y'all want to take another shot at this? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe we should start with that, because... you're not always here. You're just sort of here to talk about your experience. You don't, like, have stock in Square Enix, so you're not necessarily here to sell people on the game, but if you were, this one, for me at least, is a very hard sell, because it's, first of all, I'm not a big FMV game person, and then the second, it's this big fucking Shibuya Scramble vibes, a game I, like, straight up hated.
Yeah, it was directed by Koichiro Ito, who happened to be the main scenario writer for that game, but, it's going for a very different thing than Shibuya Scramble did. Like, Shibuya Scramble was something of a comedy. It took a lot of goofy angles of people just pointing at the camera and shouting, in addition to having a few more serious moments. But this one's trying to be somewhat more serious in general. Like, you basically... The story focuses on Haruka Kagami, who is basically a up-and-coming mystery novelist. The The researcher that she uses to make sure the details in her book are okay comes up to her one day and is like, hey, my family's having a bit of a ceremony soon, but I might need your help with something there. So she ends up going to this gigantic estate, like the estate of this family called the Shijimas. During their cherry blossom ceremony, she finds out that there is a skeleton buried under that tree that has recently been unearthed, dating back to around a century ago. And through the help of multiple short stories based on, like, well, the short stories were published in publications that actually existed in Japan in real life. Like, they... This is a game that throws around a lot of interesting publication names that you've probably never heard of because, like, it was just from a different culture and they were... These publications were much older. But it kind of uses that to tell a story that is in love with, like, the history of Japanese murder mysteries and also just tell a pretty moving story at times about this one family's tragic past and the ridiculous pursuit that is trying to grant immortality or agelessness, as this story puts it.
And of course, you have a big association with sort of like not just games, but a lot of different fiction that is like crime fiction, detective fiction, right? You have your Danganronpa interest, like even just specifically Japanese crime. You're a big fan of the Kendaichi case files. Like this is your wheelhouse.
Also, yeah. It sounds a lot like the Centennial Case. You know, you brought up 428 Shibuya Scramble. Like this game feels like from, you know, like I walk home from work and I see her Jen like playing this game. It sounds a lot more like grounded. Like, yeah, there's like it's an absurd murder mystery at times, but like this is a much more grounded type of story, it seems like.
I'd say that by the end, it does have some pretty wild what the fuck twists that they throw in there. But overall, yeah, it's trying to tell a more... It's just trying to tell a more grounded story, as you put it, and also a period piece at times. Like, it goes into Japan's post-World War I history, the temporary boom they had during the 70s, like, the various earthquakes that have happened for them. It basically takes these real-world events and tells this interesting story around them. Like, there's a specific bit where they're where Haruka is looking into is basically reading the first pulp novel she's handed about this family. And it uses this line to describe 1922. The flowers of modernity were blooming and they were coming out of the skulls of our dead. It goes hard sometimes with that stuff. And I kind of appreciated it using historical context to tell a story that was sometimes goofy, sometimes very emotional. The part where you play it can be a little weird sometimes, though, because...
Yeah, because, you know, this is a game that was released not just on PC, this was released on Switch, PS5, you know, that sort of thing.
And PS5 is the only platform where you can get it in 4K. Like, you immediately notice because the size is 65 gigabytes as opposed to, like, 15. But it would have been great if they had that same level of quality on the footage for the PC version. Anyway, like, the way you actually play it is you're kind of watching the scenes as they play out. Occasionally, a name or an item will appear. And if you hit a button at the right time, it'll give you a little description or it'll kind of note it in your case file. And at various points through the story, you basically go into a mind palace sort of scenario where you're taking clues, attaching them to...
The reasoning phase.
Reasoning phase, yes. You take clues, you attach them to mysteries, and you use them to form various hypotheses. And these hypotheses can be as straightforward as like, oh, okay, there's a trail of blood, but it might have been there to mislead us to more ridiculous things like, oh, this mummy is actually alive. And part of the thing with that game is just taking all of those various hypotheses, figuring out what the actual truth is, and presenting it to the rest of the suspects like a classic murder mystery. And, like, it's not easy. There are moments where I genuinely screwed up, and it'll play a little... This is the most 428 part of it, probably. Once you screw up, it plays a little... It basically has the rest of the cast chime in to be like, no, that can't be right, and here's a good reason why it wouldn't be right. And everyone just makes a grumpy face at the protagonist before she goes, oh, I will rethink this. And it sends you back to the reasoning phase. But, yeah, it has some really compelling mysteries with some results that I was not expecting at all. And overall, I think it also is just, like, a cut above most FMV games, just because the budget and level of production here is just not something you've seen since the 90s when they were trying to make FMV games a real thing. Like, of course there were a bunch of cheapy... Of course, there were a bunch of dirt cheap, cheesy ones in the 90s, but there were also people who tried to pour real money into it. Mm. And this kind of reminds me of those earlier attempts.
Right, where instead of, like, Contradiction Spot the Liar that relies on the kitschiness of the FMV, here it seems like Centennial Case is trying to go for, like, you know, the sort of 90s dream of the interactive film.
Yeah, as long as you're not playing it with the English dub, which is incredibly cheesy and often comes across as straight up awful sometimes. When you're playing it with Japanese on, the actors do a phenomenal job at times.
Yeah, if nothing else, like, this was absolutely Jennifer's bag, you know, like you said, yeah. Six, you know, Danganronpa and, like, others, like, she lives for murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that it had a whole glossary teaching me more about, like, traditional Japanese murder mysteries in general. Like, it went into the various histories of the publications that Haruka is interacting with, got into, like, famous texts like the 800 Tricks and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it sounds to me better done than Shibuya Scramble, given, you know, I know I keep making this comparison, but, like, it's a Japanese live-action, like, suspense thriller mystery thing by literally the same writer, yeah. So I feel like I'm allowed to.
Yeah, the director is the person who wrote that game, so.
Yeah.
it's just hard for me to, like, I want to believe that this is good, but, like, one, you know, I just don't vibe with FMV, so maybe I wouldn't. Like, I can't. It's not that FMV is forbidding, but I don't naturally find it charming, and so I have that hang up. And then also, it's just, like, it is hard for me to, without, you know, reading some, seeing some, inherently believe that I'm going to be able to tolerate the writing from the guy who wrote Shibuya Scramble, which, yeah, like, the writing was just insufferable in that game for me.
Yeah, that's totally fair. But as I was getting into earlier, this year, even when there's supposed to be slow years or slow periods in time, like, there's always something I find that ends up capturing my attention and making me pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, I think compared to Shibuya Scramble, like, the whole... It has a lot more mechanical, like, depth.
Yeah, because, like, a murder mystery is, like... Like, murder mystery in video game is, like, fairly well-understood, well-worn territory. Like, hell, you know, like, one of my first, you know, visual novels was the Ace Attorney series, and that series is, like, I think it's approaching, it's been its 20th anniversary for a while. Maybe even 25th, it's not that old. But, like, you know, that's been around for a very long time. And just even before that, like, the mechanics of, you know, murder mystery works a lot better for like an FMV setting as well than, say, you know, Thriller in Shibuya.
Yeah, and this game, like, challenges you by not only throwing a bunch of junk information your way, in addition to, like, the legitimately useful information, it also grades you at the end, based on how many mistakes you made and all that.
You pick up a clue and it says, smoking sexy style, you know?
I can see people maybe waiting for a price drop on this one because it's like $50, and that might be hard sell for people who aren't traditionally into murder mysteries, FMV games, or the combination of the two. But yeah, when it hits people's ideal price point, I would totally recommend checking it out.
Yeah, I do. I can see that at that price point for a game like this, where you are kind of taking a risk on it. Yeah, maybe makes more sense to wait for a price drop, or just, you know, look and see if you can catch some footage, you know, someone streaming it or something, and get a sense for it.
I think you know, it does like a pop up at the beginning of like, hey, you know, keep the, you know, don't spoil it for people, but like, you know, at the same time, I'm sure there's like a quick look out there or whatever that kind of gives you a vibe as to like what you're going for.
Nextlander is playing it, though they're also playing it in English, so I feel like that doesn't give you a full view of what's happening, but also it might be a good way to see if the mechanics interest you.
So proud of Jen. She hasn't been in the anime fandom that long, and she's still like, she has now become the subs versus dubs person.
I like some dubs. I just think that there are other dubs, especially for a game like this, where you hear the dub and you're like, oh, I'm switching that over immediately.
I'm just saying, I'm proud of you.
Is that true?
So yeah. No, Centennial Case seems all right. And speaking of like Square Enix, if you didn't have anything more you wanted to say about
that. Yeah, I was going to say, like, well, what's the transition here? Is it from, hey, I played a new game during this period, to, hey, I played a game I've been playing for a while? Or is it to, hey, I played a game from the 90s?
Yeah, well, well, hold on. Chrono Cross came out in 2000.
I'm also going to be playing a Square Enix game for the 90s in like 2 months when Live Alive comes out. But yeah.
2000! Sure.
Chrono Cross is 1999, you liar.
Fuck. I thought it was 2000.
It was 2000 in the States. It was 1999 in Japan.
Okay. So I'm in that nebulous territory of technically
that strange territory of lying to me to try and win an argument.
Well.
Don't believe you. Tell me about Chrono Cross, Kieran.
So, Chrono Cross, released in 99 in Japan and 2000 in the States. This was announced a little while ago at a Nintendo Direct, and it's, you know, available on most platforms. It is a re-release of Chrono Cross. Chrono Cross is a it's a sequel in... Okay. Chrono Trigger comes out, blows everybody's minds. Like, Chrono Trigger is like the RPG that is like the dream team of the mid-90s. You have fucking like Akira Toriyama like doing the art direction. Oh god, who was the composer? No, it's a different person. So, okay. Yosunori Mitsuda.
And Uematsu.
Okay, both of them. Yeah. Yeah, like... And several, like, writers and such that are just, like, huge in Squaresoft at the time. And then they were like, well, this game is, like, really good. Like, this original game is really good, and we have Yasunori Mitsuda still around, but it's, like, you know, a game like Chrono Trigger comes out, like, once in a lifetime. And I imagine the team at Squaresoft at the time was like, well, if we cannot recreate Chrono Trigger, let's try for something a little different. And thus it created Chrono Cross.
I feel like if you want to talk about the relationship between the two games, like one of the best comparisons I can think of is like Xenosaga to Xenoblade.
Yes.
Where like, it's it if you look into the lore, it's like, oh, okay, actually these are connected, but you could easily just not know that.
Exactly.
Playing the games.
Yeah, like in Chrono Cross, there are certain references to characters and events from Trigger. And then there's the Radical Dreamers, which we'll get into it, like in a little bit. Like this game that kind of came between both of them that connected the two games together. But if Chrono Cross was named, you know, literally anything else, if it was just, I don't know, Blue-Haired Boy Time Adventure, that'd be a worse name. But its connection to the Chrono, like, is it, does it count as a series if it's like basically 2.5 games?
Kind of.
Debatable.
It's debatable.
Like,
because Radical Dreamers isn't explicitly a sequel to Trigger. It's,
it is explicitly a sequel to, I mean, like, they don't say that, but like, you know, you play it and every, like,
yeah,
it's a sequel to Trigger.
Sure. Regardless, I'm getting like kind of caught in the weeds here. It is, you know, so Chrono Cross is this like kind of big new RPG from like Squaresoft in the late 90s. And I remember really enjoying it back in the day and thinking that it is like, it is really something. There's something like kind of magical to this game. And you know what? Replaying this, I'll just put it out there. Like, replaying it now, yeah, this port is like technically a little worse than like the PS1 port, but in ways that are like, I can kind of overlook, because the core gameplay and story of Cross is still this really compelling thing to me. Hmm. Like, I think one of the things that Cross does really well is it takes a page from like Suikoden's book and is like, okay, there's like 40 recruitable characters in this game or something to that effect. And I guess, like, for me, like, so basic premise, Serge is a kid who lives in this like port town in, you know, this world. And then one day, after like collecting like, you know, lizard bones for a girl he likes, like, he gets, you know, suddenly and completely transported to like a sort of mirror world, a world that looks almost exactly like his own. And for all intents and purposes, nothing has changed, except he discovers that, you know, people talk about like this boy that died like a number of years ago. And it turns out, well, he was the one who apparently died some time ago, but he's still alive. And there's this kind of like mystery, you know. You have like Chrono Trigger, and the, like, that game is all about like jumping between timelines, whereas Chrono Cross is almost like jumping between dimensions. And there's still time travel involved, but, you know, Cross presents this sort of big mystery of like, well, why in the world is, you know, Serge able to travel between these two worlds, and what changed with his death, things like that. But there was a moment that, like, really cemented to me, like, oh, wait a minute, this game still kind of has it. Like, when I played it a number of years ago, after you meet the first character you can kind of recruit, Kid, you know, she joins your party, and you go to this town. And then, like, through events of the story, you realize, like, okay, I need to get to this guy's mansion. You go to the mansion, you travel there, and the guards basically rebuff you and say, hey, you can't go in here. And in most RPGs, it's sort of like, well, there's really only one path to get to that manor. But then you just, if you follow your natural curiosity in the port town that you go to, you realize there's many ways to, like, get to this manor. Serge can, you know, learn about, just by, like, wandering around the world and talking to NPCs, something that you just do in these types of games. You start hearing scuttlebutt of, like, oh, there was, like, a rock musician who got really depressed and ran into the forest. And you're like, well, that's weird. I wonder what's up with that. And then you talk to, like, you know, a shop clerk, and he says, hey, you know, I heard that guy ran into the forest. Does he doesn't know that there's like a secret path to the manor. And you're like, oh, okay, so that's a route. And then you meet like a hero in like someone's house saying like, oh, I've lost my badge. You help him find his badge if you want to. And then he says, oh, I have this invitation to this manor that you're going to. I can make you my plus one. And it's like, you can choose like kind of which path you're taking. And there's like a third path of like, you meet this bandit kid who is like, hey, I know a path. Like, you know, he has like some issue that if you help him with, again, he'll get you to the manor. Like, it's still a basic, like a simple structure of help character X to get to place Y. But by the way, Cross, like, Chrono Cross tends to present these things, how they just kind of naturally, I wouldn't say like fall into your lap, but just like, just you as a player having a natural curiosity about the world, you find your path forward. And I think that's really cool.
So you're saying that Chrono Cross is an immersive sim?
Fuck off.
Yeah, I played, so here's a funny thing. You look at the story section on Wikipedia, uh-huh, and it is four very long paragraphs. I played a lot of Chrono Cross. Mm-hmm. I would say I played maybe 20 hours. And where I got to is about the middle of the first paragraph.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's just that the stuff that happens later is more right, like takes more time to explain, or if it's just this game's long as shit. But I was always like, I admired what Chrono Cross was doing, but I found it to be an incredibly frustrating game.
Sure. And it is frustrating to learn that, like, you know, on this like new playthrough, you know, like several years removed from my original playthrough, on like when I downloaded the PS1 classic on the Vita, and then even more removed from that when in the early 2000s it's so funny that I'm having this vivid sense memory come back to me. A family friend of ours, he went to serve overseas, and he left us a bunch of games, and one of the games was Chrono Cross. And I remember running Chrono Cross was specifically a challenge on our PS2 because of like the way the disc sat. So me and my brother came up with a way of like using like clear tape to like weigh down the disc. It was a whole thing. We got it to work and nothing was broken. I still have that PS2 and it works fine.
Okay. What was the frustrating part though?
Well, getting it to work, but I'm saying...
Like, no, I mean, the frustrating thing you discovered all these years later.
Sure. Okay. It's not that I discovered it all these years later. It's more like this recent playthrough reminded me that, for example, there is a party member early in the game that you're just locked out of completely if you just say, when you meet Kid on the cliff and say, hey, we should hang out and, like, you know, get to this town. Like, it's a little frustrating to be like, oh, if I take Kid's offer initially, I can't get the childhood best friend to join my party ever. And that kind
there's a lot of those. Like, there's one that really pisses me off is there's a part where you've been hanging out with Kid for a while and Kid gets poisoned. And it's like, okay, in order to cure her, we need to get the venom from a hydra, and then we can cure her. And the only way to get the cool party member is to say no. And not only that, that's also the only way to get three more cool party members in like 10 hours. It just remembers that you did that. And 10 hours later, if you said, I'll help them, those people won't fucking talk to you for no reason.
Right. Yeah. I think it is one of those things where like Chrono Cross is a game with a lot of ambition, and you're right, it's like, it's a messy sort of ambition. Like,
Feels like a game where they didn't accept a lot of feedback.
Sure. Or it could have just been like, you know, I don't know what the company culture at, you know, Squaresoft was at the time, but like, I mean, you would think they would put a lot of eyes and attention on Cross, but I think maybe it could have just been one of those things where, you know, like, oh, this is the follow-up to Chrono Trigger, and it's more like, we need to make this the biggest, most ambitious game. And it's like, Chrono Cross maybe would have, like, benefited from, like, scaling down a little bit, or to focus more on those, like, really magical moments of, like, oh, I can get to the manor in multiple ways. Or an event later on, like, I remember distinctly from, like, late into the game, watching my brother play this game. And, like, you like, recruit, like, an old, like, I think you recruit the old, like, mentor from, like, the first, like, village, right? And then you find out that, like, you find, like, a guy that he, like, apparently betrayed, like, 20 years ago. And you can get into a boss fight with him, and you find out that the person that, like, that the mentor figure had betrayed or something, like, they target that mentor figure exclusively during the battle. It's, like, little things like that, where it's, mm-hmm. like, the story actually has a connection to, like, the way this game is played. And it's, like, more moments of, like I said, you could find multiple ways into the manor, or multiple answers to the same problem, or just happen across the world, like, find, like, you know, like, you know, playing this game and just being like, oh, you find, like, a weird skull man, and you're like, you fight, like, a talking skull man at one point. He just cracks jokes. But then you realize, oh, wait a minute, if I collect all his bones, I can reassemble him, and he's a new party member. Like, mm-hmm. that's cool. But also, like I said, like, it runs into some issues. Like, your equipment is not going to be very exciting in Chrono Cross. Like, the scale of equipment is going to be pretty much the same until you get, like, later into the game. Because, you know, there's, like, over 20, like, party members you can recruit. And managing, like, individual effects across individual, like, characters would get really frustrating really quickly.
Rewinding a bit, I kind of want to push back on the notion that a game locking you out of characters based on choices is necessarily a bad thing. Based on the description you've given about all these different routes you can take to solve a problem, I think that that kind of complements the design the game is going for. And, like, this is something we discussed before the podcast when I was just mentioning triangle strategy. That game does a thing where it doesn't necessarily tell you what your choices are affecting all the time, but it basically decides the kind of people you get in your party sometimes. Like, certain choices will mean you run into certain characters and they'll agree to help you. Or, based on your current invisible alignment, certain characters will suddenly appear at your camp being like, hey, I want to join you.
Sure. And
I think that even though the game is very long, I think that there's a value to having players make choices and live with them, in terms of you may not get to see this bit until you go back to it a second time or a third time.
The thing is, Jen, you haven't, yeah. you like in triangle strategy, you never hit a point where you're like, okay, because I chose moral choices, I'm stuck with a party member of, like, a dog with a huge tongue, a frog, and a baby, and I fucking hate all of these people.
Right, like, here's the thing.
Oh, you hate,
like,
the dog? The dog looks so cute.
I'm just saying.
The dog is nothing.
Like, he talks with a lisp, and it's kind of funny if you, like, it's only funny when, in my head, he sounds like either Bobcat Goldthwait or, like, Dom DeLuise, you know?
Well, and it's also just, like, I want party members who have content.
Yeah.
The dog is just there, and occasionally he says, "That's Quaithy," and I'm like, okay, great, thanks, dog.
Sure. yeah, it's like, ironically enough, like, Trigger actually pulled this off, like, way better several years ago. Like, I'm gonna go into, like, a, like, kind of late game moment into Trigger to, I guess, spoiler warning for a nearly 30-year-old game at this point. So, at one point, like, in Chrono Trigger, Chrono dies and is, like, this is a big deal in the narrative. Like, you know, and you gotta go on this quest to get him back. And then you find, like, the villain from, like, the first part of the game, Magus, like, standing on this cliff. And you can speak to Magus, and you find out, like, through some, through the time logic, wait a minute, he was actually trying to, like, keep Lavos from being summoned again, basically. Mm-hmm. But your party members don't exactly know that. In fact, you get, like, a dialogue option, like, you, like, encounter him. And, like, Luca gets, like, really pissed at him, right? And, like, he says, oh, do you want to settle this now? And you have a question. You're like, he poses the question. It's a yes, no. If you hit yes, you get, like, this super cool boss fight. Like, he's, like, pretty strong. He's fucking, like, dope. But you eventually, like, take him down. And that's, like, that in and of itself could be a really satisfying moment. But if you say no and walk away, he then joins your party. He says, like, wait a minute. Like, he realizes something about, like, I was a little too rash or something like that. And he realizes, I can help you. And you then make that choice of, like, do I let Magus, who I had villainized and, like, was part of the problem, do not get me wrong, he is, like, one of the wizards that helps summon Lavos, but you can have him join your team. And the thing is, the difference between that and a Chronocross choice, in Chronocross, they just lock out the character or something. And even if you do get that character, they might have an occasional side quest or, like, have an interesting line, but it's not like, oh, cool boss fight or cool, like, character joins my team.
And also there's a like, I would say in Chrono Trigger, the choices that you have, there is a very direct relationship of, like, choice to consequence. And Triangle Strategy, it's a little more removed, right? But it's still going to be like, okay, you have shown that as a character, these are your values, and therefore these are the kinds of things that will happen, right? Chrono Cross is Calvin Ball as far as what choices do. There are instances where I don't think that's true, but, like, the fact that unless you say fuck you die to Kid,
who's on the cover and easily one of the most enjoyable and fun party members mm-hmm. of the game,
and unless you tell her to go screw, you can't get the cool, honorous, chivalrous knight who would absolutely want to protect the girl in danger. There's no connection between. That's just what happens. It doesn't make sense. It's just what happens.
Right. It would be one thing if it's, like, you tell Kid to, like, grin and bear, like, not grin and bear it, but, like, you make some choice now, and then you realize, okay, this, like, leads to a different choice. I mean, again, we just spent, like, the past couple of minutes kind of, like, dunking on Chrono Cross, but again, I still have affection for it, because I can see that ambition reach out into games that we play today. Like, honestly, I don't necessarily think it's not necessarily a one-to-one, but, like, the thing that you mentioned with, like, Triangle Strategy, like, Chrono Cross had to, like, crawl before, like, other games that would try this could run. Like,
yeah, and with Triangle Strategy's case, I think it has more to do with Fire Emblem, which was doing similar stuff way beforehand of, like, based on choices, characters die, or you can only recruit certain people. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like Cross was, like, obviously not the first game where it's like, oh, you have multiple party members, you gotta choose who you hang out with or whatever. I mean, fucking Ultima was like doing that shit, like, you know, 10-15 years prior at that point. But it stands that, like, this was, like, a big, bombastic AAA game. Looked like nothing that had come out before it. Like, this looked, like, not necessarily, like, this was, like, kind of groundbreaking with some of the stuff that it was doing. And it was like, oh, wait a minute, a game that looks this good is this ambitious? It's like, it was like kind of like just an interesting crossing of the wires, I think.
And I think it was really unfair, frankly, to Chrono Cross to call it Chrono Cross. I think it was called something else. Like, there would be people who wouldn't have tried it, but I think people would look on it overall more fondly if it wasn't. And, like, okay, let's take a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to list some names here.
Sure.
Yoshinori Kitase. You probably know that name. Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy X.
Mm-hmm.
Hironobu Sakaguchi, you might know that one.
Yeah.
The guy who made Final Fantasy. Akira Toriyama, Dragon Ball. Yuji Horii, Mr. Dragon Quest. Also, Portopia Serial Murder Case.
Mm-hmm.
This is a list of people who were on Chrono Trigger and had nothing to do with Chrono Cross.
Right.
And so it's like I'm not dunking on, like, the staff of Chrono Cross, but it is not mostly the people that made Chrono Trigger. And it is fewer, like, big visionaries, just, like, straight up.
Right, or if it was, like, there was clearly, like, this team that had a vision, but, like, may have not had just, like, the years of experience that, like, the like people that worked on Trigger had, because like you know, the story of Chrono Trigger, you know, is again a game that like required other games to crawl and stumble before it could run.
And also, frankly, Chrono Trigger is not very ambitious. It's very good, but it's not actually that ambitious. It looks good, it sounds good, but like mechanically and structurally, it's a JRPG of the era.
Right. But the thing was, it was one of those games that was just like polished to a fucking mirror shine. That like, there's a reason why, you know, people still like, there's a reason I still fondly think about it. Like, quick side story, I remember when I was living in Japan in 2011, I was hanging out with some guys there, and we found out there was like a secondhand store that was like a 20-minute bike ride away, and someone said, hey, they're just selling copies of like Chrono Trigger on SNES for like super cheap, and I picked up like 5 copies. I got a copy specifically, one for my brother, one for myself, one to display, and then one to sell at like an anime con when I got back home. It was interesting, but like, it was like, I like, again, maybe like I keep bringing him up, but it's like a lot of my fondness for the Chrono games is just like me playing them with my brother like years and years ago, and like Trigger and Cross like just bring out so many like really happy memories for me. I'm happy that like there is a way to play Cross on like the Switch and other platforms. Just sidebar, it's not a great port, all things considered. I imagine it's one of those scenarios where like it's the classic Square like Square RPG problem of, oh, they just tossed out all the source code after finishing the game. Hence why like people like may have an issue with like how it looks, and I get it. Like, I mean, they did a lot of fucking work to like make Final Fantasy VIII Remastered look at like, they were, I think they were trying to do a thing with like 8 Remastered, which is like, we need to make this game look like how it looked like in your memory rather than how it actually looked. And I think they tried it again with Cross to not as good a result.
Also, just straight up runs worse than the PS1 version. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. To my knowledge, like, I've played some of this remaster as well, and the one beef that I remember hearing from people, and like there are people who are like, this looks worse, and I'm like, no, I don't agree with you, right? But as far as like, yeah, it does not run very well.
Yeah, like the fact is, I was getting frame drops in the opening village just walking my character around, and it's like, it's not great.
Yeah,
but you know, again, I'm glad that I can engage with this game again. I mean, I still love its combat system. I think it's like really cool. I think the story, again, it's a game of ambitions, and like I think I've established this just generally before, I like it when I have a fondness for like games, series, whatever, that like bite off a little bit more than they can chew and still like and somehow manage not to choke. It's a little like, I don't know, weird analogy, but it's like, I like it when, you know, a game is so clearly like trying for something and it is greater than what they are capable of, but damn it, it's still like really cool when they like try. And it's like, I'm glad it's out there, and that I can play an official translation of Radical Dreamers, like the fucking white whale of like the SNES RPG, you know, fandom from like years and years ago.
Yeah, the funniest part about that too is that like they had like a Q&A with some of the people who worked on Chrono Cross and Radical Dreamers, and apparently the decision to include Radical Dreamers was because the scenario writer heard that it was going for a lot on eBay, and it was like, oh, okay. If it's, people are selling it for that much, might as well just throw it in as a freebie.
Right. But it's like, it's like, if you remember, like, again, just back in the day, I just remember fan projects trying to translate, you know, Radical Dreamers, and it was like, oh, they got, like, DMCAs from, like, Square, or Square Enix at the time, I guess, but it's like,
Yeah, I played a fan translation back in the day.
Yeah, and it's like,
Venom is unfair, but my real harsh critique of this is saved actually for Radical Dreamers, which I think is just straight up a bad game. I think it's really neat, and some of the art is really pretty, but I think the writing is not great. I think the mechanics of it are terrible, and the main thing is, like, I don't hold this against Chrono Cross because it has to pick up the torch from Radical Dreamers, mm-hmm. but Radical Dreamers is like, remember fucking Chrono Trigger? Remember, like, this, you know, fun, like, Dragon Ball style adventure? What if it was fucking edgy and everyone was suffering after the game end? It's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, I mean, the ending of Trigger, like, is very much like classic JRPG of, like, you know, humanity's indomitable hope, and like that sort of in the face of like extinction or whatever. That's as classic as you can get with these stories. And I think it's like, at the end of the day, my reverence for Chrono Cross the Radical Dreamers Edition isn't so much like the technical aspect or whatever. I think, and like I said, it is a deeply flawed game, and Radical Dreamers is also deeply flawed. But you know what? It's nice that I can now talk about those games in context and be like, if you want to see an idea of what this looked like, you could just play it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I couldn't have given this critique about Radical Dreamers before, even though I played it before, because it was so hard to get a hold of and play that, like, your brain wasn't ready to critique it. It was still caught up in, holy shit, I can't believe I got this to run.
Right. It's like, running off of, like, some instance of ZSNES.
Because 9X wouldn't run it. SNES 9X would not run it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe they got there. But
I'm sure they got there. I think, like, 9X has, like, really, really good compatibility. Like, 9X is to the go-to when it comes to, like, SNES emulation on PC and stuff. But it's like, man, it is like, I'm just sort of like, I'm happy that I can now, like, really all I need is now, like, there is a perfectly fine way to play Trigger. Now it's on, like, Steam, and they fixed the Steam version. So now, like, on Steam or whatever, I can be like, you can play those three Chrono games just right now. And it's like, that's really cool to be able to, like, see this series, see where it goes, and even when it stumbles, I'm, for the sake of, like, preservation and just being able to talk about, like, how influential and important these games are, sometimes you just need to kind of play it in all their messiness. And I'm glad that, like, this series I've held so, like, dear in my heart, I can now just, like, gift people copies on Steam and be like, hey, check out this game I loved when I was a kid, you know? A nice feeling.
Unfortunately, I am looking at the Steam page for Chrono Trigger, and people, like, reviews from this month are like, this is a buggy disaster, it will delete your save.
Oh, well, fuck me, I guess.
Hey, you can still play it on PC using other tools.
Right, right.
Hell, yeah. Like, someone did a review recently on a up-and-coming, like, basically the go-to PS1 emulator right now is called Duck Station, and you can get Chrono Cross running at 60 frames per second in that thing, and it looks all right.
All right, well, here's what you do. You can then say, I have a legal copy on Steam, and then play a backup.
Yeah?
And just say it's a backup.
You know what I'll say is, I have a legal copy on Super Nintendo. What's up, bitches?
I think my Japanese copy of Trigger is somewhere in storage at, not my parents' house, but my parents got, like, a storage thing. I need to get some stuff from storage at some point. But yeah, that's kind of like Radical Dreamers edition of Chrono Cross. Like, I'm more happy that it exists than, like, the reality of it. But at the end of the day, when I hear, like, when I saw that, like, opening cutscene again, I was like, Getting shivers, you know?
The music in that is a fucking all-timer. That opening music,
mm-hmm.
the violin theme, is just a fucking banger.
absolutely gorgeous. Again, it was really good they were to get Yasunori Mitsuda back for this game, because like,
but they specifically didn't touch that song because there's nothing you can do to it. It's perfect.
It's absolutely gorgeous and incredible. And yeah.
So I guess I'm ending this on a bit of a bummer note. Okay. So last year, they made the announcement with Total War Three Kingdoms that they were stopping support for Total War Three Kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, we did 7 bits of DLC and we're done here. And there are two things, like, that sounds perfectly fine, right? And there are two things that make it a bit of a problem. One is Total War games usually have a lot more DLC than this.
Mm-hmm.
So right. There was just a bit of an expectation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is they chose to stop at a moment where the game was just in bad shape.
Like, it wasn't like in a place where it's like, okay, it's stable, barring like new OSs and new changes to like computers, like you should be able to just play this.
Right. This isn't like that Dragon Ball patch that we thought was the end of them just being like, here's a final farewell to make sure everything runs smooth.
And then Labcode 21 comes out.
Yeah, the Labcode 21 comes out. Honestly, maybe that's the best comparison is what if the Labcode 21 update added a lot of bugs?
Uh-huh.
And what if they added Labcode 21 and then the next day said, and we're fucking done. We will never update this game again. So I've been playing a lot of it, and some of this stuff, it was like there are weird bugs that were like kind of annoying. But recently, because I've been getting deeper in and kind of pushing the game harder, I've seen so many more of them, and I'm sort of split, right? One is, before, when they were like, and we'll announce, you know, a new Three Kingdoms thing, and part of me was like, I mean, hey, I'm excited for that, but also, I feel like you could just keep working on this. I don't know if you could. Maybe you need to start over because this is such a disaster. And let me talk about why, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, what is it specifically that is, like, kind of making this, like, a disaster?
It's so many things. First of all, one of the most famous ones is, Jen, you read Three Kingdoms with me. You remember the passes, the famous battles in the passes, like Hu Lao Pass and stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's a big thing in this era of Chinese history, is that there are these places where it's like, oh, there are two mountains, usually, or two hills, and there's, like, a valley in between. And there is like a military installation that is holding that pass, right? So there are the passes that are like big, like walls, protective walls that define your borders. Sometimes people can just walk through them like they're not there.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I had a really interesting instance where I came at one from the west side, right? And I started to siege it, and then I got flanked and they attacked me, and I clicked retreat, and my guy ran through it to the east side. And then when I had control over him again, he was like, oh, I can't walk through that. What are you talking about? I'm trapped on a different half of the map now. I'm like, oh, great. Okay, well, I guess you're just dead now because you walked through a wall of stone, and then it turned stone again and you can't go anywhere. That's an annoying bug. Oof. Another annoying bug is that sometimes the game just spawns armies of looters. I thought I knew what was going on. I thought what was happening, because this can happen, is that like the AI doesn't manage their city well.
Mm-hmm.
And because they don't have their city managed well, there's like a riot, right? And they form a little army. And then sometimes they cause problems for other people. And I was like, let me just take over this area where this keeps happening. It is weird that these armies keep spawning like full strength. Usually they spawn at like 5%, 10% strength, and they were spawning at 100% strength. They were spawning as like really powerful armies.
Jeez.
And so I was like, that's weird, but whatever. Maybe they're just doing this in Fog of War and I'm not noticing. Let me take over this entire area. Let me conquer this entire area of the map so that whoever's doing this, you know, can't be doing it. And then I saw... And, like, I'm very good at managing my cities. I'm not sure I'm perfectly efficient, but I do not have rebellions. They do not happen to me. And yet I saw, when I hit end turn, I saw just randomly spawn in front of one of my cities a full health looter army that then conquered the city without me being able to control anything.
That doesn't sound good at all.
No. And then, even past bugs, there are just design elements that suck ass. Like, diplomacy is just broken in this game. It's just broken. Here's a fun example. Whenever you, whenever an enemy lays siege to a city, or you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the options are, like, attack, like, sort of, like, stall, like, hold your ground, or demand surrender, or if you're on the other side, surrender, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that button exists. AI will literally never surrender and never accept a surrender. That button does nothing, and it's one of the three big buttons you can hit.
Well, did it work in, like, previous patches?
Or it has never at any point in the game worked.
Okay, well, that's...
And then, like, because from now on, we're just talking about structural things that have been true for basically the whole run of this game, right? Like, okay, here's another one. When you are, like, the bigger you get, the more of a penalty you get to diplomacy, which is both intuitive and counterintuitive, because it's intuitive in the fact of, like, oh, sure, you're a big threat and people don't want to work with you. It's counterintuitive in the fact that no one shows any fear of consequences, right? You can have seven armies lined up at the door of a person who has a single tiny town to their name, and you say, let me walk through here on my way to fight someone else, and they say, fuck you. It's like, what? No, then I'm going to kill you. Like, they have no consequence of... like, no concept of consequence, it seems like. There are so many times where you try to do deals with them, and it's like, what happens is when you try and make a deal, it has, like, a score of, like, okay, this is how much worth you will need to give them in order to make this deal happen. Except if they say never. If they say never, the deal just cannot happen. And, like, game after game, you're like, I would like to make this person a vassal. Can't happen. I would like to, like get military access. Never. It's like not on the table. Impossible to do. Doesn't matter how much bigger than them I am. And then this doesn't apply to AI factions, because I would have times where, again, I was like breathing down this person's neck and I would be like, become my vassal. And they'd be like, go fuck yourself. And then I'd hit end turn. And then the other empire would instantly make them a vassal because they have no diplomacy, like negatives. They just can do whatever the fuck they want.
Now, is this, like, sort of, like, structural problem? Is this, like, an issue in some of the other Total War-like games?
That's what I was going to bring up, yeah. Because, like, the frustrating thing with computer strategy games is that sometimes they just get into this state and they just never get fixed. And sometimes there's just, like, very good Total War releases and some that are just bad and stay bad.
I mean, the thing is,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, because I don't play very much of the other Total War games. I don't like them very much.
Sure.
But those games, like Total War Warhammer is aptly named. Total War Three Kingdoms is not a good name. It's part of the Total War series, but the game chews you out if you make war all the time. It is actually not about that. Diplomacy is a big focus in a way it is not in any other game. And the way they've built their basic systems just can't account for it. They're just not capable.
It really is, like... you know, suddenly something comes to mind where, like... there's, like, an old video by the YouTuber, like, Campster, right? He was talking mm-hmm. about system choices and controllers and things like that. And this is like an older video, but it suddenly springs to mind this idea of like you have narrative based games. And again, this was like 2010s, but I think it still relates here. Think about like games involving like a narrative or discussion or whatever, like a systemizing that. And he said, imagine a scenario in which like racing games were developed along that same like thinking. You'd play a racing game and a big like text pop-up would come up and you would say, there's a turn coming. Do you want to turn left or turn right? And it was more of a point of like how game systems are not very... I can't think of many games that like can capture that like diplomacy in negotiation in these sort of like vague things that like computers aren't very good at like just kind of in general, and how that really hasn't changed in the past like decade or so.
I mean, you have a whole genres that are kind of about this. You have all the, you have diplomacy, you have or not diplomacy, you have, sorry, democracy. You have the Civilization series, you have Galactic Civilizations, you have a lot of 4X games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I think I would not say that those don't feel artificial, but they feel understandable and fair in their diplomacy. Like, and this game does not feel understandable or fair.
Sure. And like, at least with those 4X games, you can at least rely on the idea that, like, okay, either A, this AI is programmed to perform in a certain way, like, you know, this AI is more aggressive. Like, even back in the day, you know, it's very funny to think about, like, Nuclear Gandhi. But, yeah, like, you could say that, like, most of the time when you play that game, if you make a peace proposition with Gandhi, he's probably going to roll make a dice roll that favors, like, accepting the offer. Like, they still do the dice roll in the background to, like, add just an element of randomness. But at the very least, you can make assumptions about, like, here's how this other general is going to act, like, here's how I can use that to my advantage to play this game. And it sounds like Total War Three Kingdoms isn't very good at that dice roll, or more accurately, they're not making dice rolls at all. So what the fuck is even the point? Like, why are you even trying some of these options that have been in there at the beginning, but like, they don't have a system to account for that?
I had a recent run, campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing as Liu Bei, Xuanda, if you're feeling nasty. And I was playing basically as honorably as I could. I would only fight people who declared war on me first. I would help out anyone who asked me. I would try and negotiate for favorable deals with people. And first of all, a lot of people hated me anyway, for reasons that were unclear.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I got Liu Kang, descendant of Liu Biao, a honorable, peaceful man, who for some reason his AI in this is Nuclear Gandhi. He's just a vicious little bitch. And he was my vassal, and he loved me. Like our it says like the plus minus on like basically how they feel about you, and he was plus 152. That's very high. He really liked me. And then one turn, out of nowhere, like literally out of nowhere, I clicked on him and he was dark red. And it said that there was a new modifier to him, which said made an unfavorable deal with us, minus 542. I had made zero deals with him. And then he declared war on me out of nowhere for no reason.
That's frustrating.
Yeah,
it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's like, I think it more speaks to the idea of, I mean, certainly like 4X games are still like, you know, doing this like better than this game, it sounds like. But also, again, I think it broadly speaks to this point of computers tend to have like a really hard time with like ambiguity, or at the very least, like inconsistent consistencies. Like, it's hard to like do that sort of thing, you know? So like, I on one hand, I can empathize with like any developer who works on like Total War. Like, I imagine these are big games and they have like big problems and, you know, more like time, like the problems get like more exponential. But also at the same time, like, from what my understanding of like the appeal of the Three Kingdoms era is not just like the big battles, it's the tense negotiations, it's the deals, it's the like, you know, alliances and breaking of alliances that like make that story as compelling as what it is. And if you're only focusing on can we re-simulate the battles, it sounds like they're not doing very good at capturing why people like that story.
And I'm really hopeful that's why they decided to cut their losses and work on a new one. I'm really hopeful.
Right. Like, you can always hope that, like, they can take whatever lessons they learned from the first game and apply it to the next one. Because maybe it's one of those things of, like, I imagine there's, like, a team at like Sega, or is it Sega that like puts out these games?
It's Creative Assembly, but they work for Sega.
So, right, right. Yes. Creative Assembly. Yeah, I imagine there are people on that team that are fully aware of like these are just problems that we just cannot like fix.
Absolutely.
Because like it's an old, like I wouldn't say it's an older game, but like, you know, it's one of the classic problems of game development where the older your system is, the harder it is to make like structural changes to it, because a decision made in day 20 of game development could have disastrous consequences for when you're day like 5,000 or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, imagine you're on the Total War engine, which I assume has been mostly the same since, you know, Shogun 2 at least, right?
Right.
And so you start doing this and you're like, okay, we need to really work on the like the diplomacy system, right? And we're like, okay, how do we add an option for people to surrender? And someone says, can't. You're like, can't? It's like, yeah, we specifically coded it so you can't do that 11 years ago. You're like, I hate it here.
Right. Again, it's one of those things. It's still that problem that like developers are running into of like, now that games are like, you're not just putting out a game and printing a disc and like sending it out and hoping that your gold version, like you might get revisions, sure. Like, they even did this back in the SNES days. Like, you know, there were revisions of certain carts, but the only way you could tell was like looking at the serial number, right? Mm-hmm. And wasn't common. And now it's like I genuinely think it's a good thing that like games can get patches, they get continued development support, that sort of thing. But again, it's like the longer in the tooth a game gets, the harder it is to make any sort of structural changes, especially if early on development you didn't leave yourself enough tools and enough like not stopgaps, but like enough like stuff in the past so that like, you know, future developers, because you might not be even be the one who worked on that game. You might just be like, all right, I shipped Total War Three Kingdoms off to my next project. And totally. Now it's now like a B team that's like doing maintenance and new DLC or whatever. And then it's like, well, they can't get guidance from like the guy who like worked on the other game because he's at like a new company now, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's a big, difficult mess that like even really storied developers can run into. And it's little things. Like, I am suddenly remembering recently, like last week? No, it was like a couple days ago that like they patched like King of Fighters 15, and because of like a weird bug or something, if you put Terry Bogard in the Garou costume, he has different frame data on Crackshoot. And it's mm-hmm. like, game development is fucking hard, y'all. Yeah. It would be extremely hilarious though if they could you imagine Terry with like a half screen crossing safe overhead?
Unfortunately, yes, I can.
I'm just saying that, like, if that was, like, in the new game, that'd be fucked up and twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah, game development is hard. Like, it is, like, and especially, I mean, there's still a fucking thing going on, you know? I imagine it's not getting much easier, so... You know, if you're out there working on a game, like, keep at it, you know? It's rough out there.
Yeah, and strategy fans aren't usually the most pleasant of critics when something isn't designed the way that they like. So, yeah, it can be hard to work within that genre.
Yeah.
Well.
Gonna keep it one scundo with you. Just gotta keep your chin up, keep working at it.
Listen, I won, all right? I became emperor today.
You know what? And that's nice. you just carry that victory to the next one, you know?
Guess how Jen, you know how long a Total War turn is, right?
Yeah.
You have a sense for that. Guess how many turns it was?
Fifty, maybe 70, something like that.
233. It's the longest campaign I've ever had. I was dying.
Jesus. Okay.
I'm dying, Squirtle.
Finally, like, I was just in an endless war with Woo, and finally, I love it when this happens, because sometimes the AI randomly decides to be reasonable, and I hit end turn, and on the little turn ticker, it becomes the Kingdom of Woo's turn, and I get a diplomacy pop-up message that just basically goes, can we stop? And I said, yes, please.
Excellent.
But yeah.
Still love the game.
Sure. It sounds like in some level, I don't know how Stadium Case fits in this, but it's like, these are big, messy games, and it's like, there's something to, like, still enjoy and love about, like, a game that might be a little bit of a mess.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that's it for us here for this latest playlist. This one is a little late this month. Next month should be a little sooner.
Sure, and just like, there should be some stuff to talk about, like just briefly. Like, I don't, like, I played the Gundam Evolution beta, but I think there's going to be more to talk about next month, so we're gonna couch that. And I'm trying to think what else is coming out like next month. DNF Duel should be out.
It will not be out by the time we record again.
You're right. Fuck. Okay, it's going to be 2 months from now before I get to talk about that game. But
as I said, just keep your eyes out and you'll find something you want to play. It always happens.
Well, it doesn't always happen.
As we had this conversation, it happens for you every time. It doesn't always happen for us. Okay. But
I'll just reinstall Transformers Devastation again, even though it's already installed.
Hecuria, what if you played Total War 3 Kingdoms?
No.
Listen, it's not that buggy. I might have oversold it. Please play with me.
Okay, get Lubu to a Tatsumaki into like a kick and then become a car.
Okay, he can't become a car, but he can do a thing where he like spins his spear in a circle and then slams it in the ground, and there's a massive explosion of fire and it kills like 50 people.
We'll talk after the pod.
All right. Okay, good. Plug zone.
All right. Kyria A Page on Twitter. You know the drill. Follow there. The stuff is on Scanline Media, and you know, just check it out. I'm working on some stuff behind the scenes that I'm really excited to like share with y'all, and also like we're gonna be doing streams and stuff, things like that. We're making a lot of moves in the background. Like, I'm really, really happy with like some of the progress we've been making with like certain podcasts and like stuff regarding the site. Like, it's exciting times at the House of Scanline. So
yeah. Never been a better time to be playing Scanline.
Mm-hmm.
Jen, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at JBU3. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. I also host a narrative gaming book club podcast called Novel Not New, a True End podcast. Both Six and Carrie are going to be on the next episode for Shenmue 3. Yeah. And Carrie still needs to start Shenmue 3.
Shut up.
So does okay. Six. Though also the reason I haven't started Shenmue 3 is because I played through all of Shenmue 1 and I'm halfway through Shenmue 2.
How about you, Six?
Oh, right. At SixDetmar, SIXDETTMAR. Listen, any of our shows, any of our work, you got concerns, you got questions, you got feedback, my DMs are open. That's why I do that. Just, you know, hit me up. But until next time, folks, peace out.
See ya.
Later.
Quick save.